So guys, just in case you missed our announcement last week, I thought I'd share again that we're running another Sheena Bates podcast competition. All of you still have the chance to participate and go into the draw to win the opportunity to be featured on a full episode of our show. So please check out my Instagram at MishBKing for more details on how you can sign up today.
You look at men sometimes and I'm surprised that they feel that they're being challenged in a way that is unfair, but of course it isn't. It's the opposite way around. It's women who've had the unfair scenario for such a long time, but I think guys are oftentimes unequipped to deal with this. They've grown up in a way where they've had everything in many respects handed them on a platter. And I even remember as a boy, there were times when I was at school, the teacher would give me a larger portion than the girl and be like, oh, well, he's the boy. And I was getting more food, and I thought, well, that's weird. You know, and I feel that guys grow up with a lot of this quite often.
That's internationally renowned fashion photographer Nigel Barker, best known for his role as a judge on the television show America's Next Top Model. Nigel is not only a master of his craft, but he's also a humanitarian, a gender equality advocate, and a phenomenal role model and father to his two beautiful children. I'm Michelle King, and you're listening to She Innovates. It's a show where we share the stories, challenges, and triumphs of women and men across innovation, technology, and entrepreneurship. I'm really excited to be sharing my conversation today with Nigel Barker. Nigel is a champion for Girl Up, the United Nations Foundation campaign that advocates for adolescent girls in the developing world. On the podcast today, Nigel's going to be sharing how all men can be feminist fathers and empower girls and boys to become whoever they want to be. Hi, Nigel.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. And, you know, I just really wanted to get started by getting you to share with our listeners, you know, why the topic of gender equality matters to you.
No, absolutely. I grew up with a very sort of strong and smart mother and grandmother who had a very difficult time. I'm part Sri Lankan. And my grandmother had my mother out of wedlock and was a bit of a maverick woman in her time in the sort of 50s in Sri Lanka. She was driving cars, she cut her hair short, she did all kinds of things which seem very normal now, but back then was actually quite outrageous. And she was sort of frowned upon by her sort of well-to-do Sri Lankan family, who actually cast her out of the family completely. And she had to sort of find her own way, and she ended up leaving Sri Lanka with my mother and my aunt, starting a new life in England. And they had to work incredibly hard. It was very difficult, sort of in the 60s and 70s, as Sri Lankan women trying to find a path in a very white England. And, you know, even though they were very well educated and everything else, they had to take jobs that they, you know, wouldn't have needed to take had they been in Sri Lanka, because their qualifications would have given them a better job. But I witnessed that. I watched how hard they worked. I watched how they never complained, how they always provided meals, how they, you know, worked 2-3 jobs and did everything they could to make sure that myself and my brothers and sisters had the best life possible, and were always incredibly supportive of every one of us. And I think so, having these sort of incredibly strong female role models in my life as well, I guess also empowered me as a man to realize that where would I be without them? You know, and I've been very lucky in life. I mean, I married an incredible woman. We've been together now for 25 years. I have two wonderful children. And, you know, my wife stands beside me in everything we do. And we share all chores, all aspects of business, and we make decisions together. And, you know, we have a great life as a result of all of those things. So with all of that, you know, I was definitely up for the challenge of trying to convince, you know, as many men as I knew to sort of join the movement and become sort of he-fishy, if you like. And certainly this is the new kind of little hashtag we have, the dad squad right now, is encouraging fathers specifically to be activated and to understand the issues at hand.
The dad squad. I love it. So look, could you share with us a little bit about, you know, why you wanted to champion Girl Up? So what is it about the organization, you know, that made you want to support their work?
you know, the more I heard, the more I learned about the Girl Up mission, the more I realized, well, obviously, listen, my young daughter growing up in this world, I want her to be as empowered, as confident, as headstrong, as educated as she could possibly be, and certainly an equal to my son, and have every opportunity that I could possibly give her, you know, that I would want growing up as a child. And it was just sort of, and I thought, okay, well, I want to join this Girl Up mission. And at the time, it was funny because I remember saying to them, you know, can I help? What can I do, you know, for Girl Up? And they said, well, we're really, you know, an organization that's trying to inspire girls for girls, not really sort of men for girls. That's not really what we're about. And I thought, and I was like, well, I know, I get it. I said, but I have a daughter and I want to help. I need to help. And I said, and most of the time when you talk about, you know, a family or you talk about a girl who's growing up, she has a father and it's important to engage that man in her life. It's one thing to tell her that she's going to face injustice. It's another thing to tell her to stand up to it. But it's also important to, I think, to educate the whole family and to encourage everyone together to stand for each other. And for some reason, there's a sort of a disconnect often in life, I think, when we grow up loving our daughters, we grow up and with daughters feeling equal with perhaps in the family. But then as soon as you sort of age out of being a sort of a child, all of a sudden the bets are off. And it's like, oh no, you're a second class citizen. Oh no, you don't deserve the same as this man here. Oh no, no, I'm not going to have you as my boss. Or I don't think that's the right, you know, I feel threatened if you are. And that's a very strange kind of thought process. And I think it's vital that we encourage men to be a part of the equation, to be a part of the solution. And that's really, really where it started for me.
Absolutely. I mean, it's critical that we have men in the fight for gender equality. And, you know, given the work that you do and the talks that you give, I just wondered, you know, how do men receive that? So have you had any feedback from men just in terms of your message that you're putting out there?
So it's interesting. It's very interesting. I mean, we just had, you know, the release of this new PSA video, Time to Rise, which I appeared in with my daughter. And there's lots of other fathers and daughters and women, and Corrine Fox, Jamie Foxx's daughter, heads it all up. And it's a great, powerful PSA using the poem Invictus. And, it, you know, it's shot in Brooklyn and it's dramatic and gets a great point across of the fact that it's the time to rise and now is the moment to really, you know, not take all the things that we've had in the past and sort of say, okay, that's okay. Like, no, we've got to rise and challenge this idea that potentially women are second-class citizens and all the rest of it. And watching the men in the audience, some, you know, looked sort of quizzically about it, at it, and I was reading their minds, and you could see some were just absolutely behind it, and like, yes, this is right. Others, they looked like they were slightly worried about it. And it's interesting. We're sort of at a moment in time where I think that men also feel vulnerable. Not that they should feel that, you know, they're going to necessarily lose jobs and things, but it's one of those things where you look at men sometimes, and I'm surprised that they feel that they're being challenged in a way that is unfair. But of course it isn't. It's the opposite way around. It's women who've had the unfair scenario for such a long time. But I think guys are oftentimes unequipped to deal with this. They've grown up in a way where they've had everything, in many respects, handed them on a platter. And I even remember as a boy, there were times when I was at school, the teacher would give me a larger portion than the girl and be like, oh, well, he's a boy. And I was getting more food. And I thought, well, that's weird. You know, and I feel that guys grow up with a lot of this quite often. And when I was watching their faces, a lot of people in the crowd, I'm preaching to the choir and they're all behind me. But there are also men there, and I'm looking at them and they're like, they can see worry in their eyes. So you get both sides of it. I mean, this is in a city like New York. So if you were to take that idea and you go somewhere else in the world, you know that they would be horrified at their concept that I would be assuming that women would be equals with men, or they would just think that I was, you know, out of my mind. We have a long way to go.
Absolutely. And Nigel, I mean, I have to say this, but it starts with men like you. It really does. So just touching on, you know, the awareness piece, I mean, how can men become more aware of some of the challenges women face? What's your advice for, you know, how they can start that journey?
It's interesting for me specifically. I've worked in the fashion industry for the longest time, and I've had many female bosses, whether it's on the television shows I've worked with, whether it's been people like Tyra Banks or even Naomi Campbell on The Face. These are the executive producers of the shows that I was working for. They're the ones calling the shots. And in the fashion industry in general, you know, most fashion designers are, you know, many are female, and many of the magazine editors and people who are hiring me for jobs and creatives are women, were women. And so I'm very used to working for women and working in that world. But You know, I have many brothers who work in finance and real estate and insurance and all the regular jobs, you know, and in those worlds, certainly in the finance world that two of my brothers work in, it's a very, very different landscape. You know, I would go to business meetings with some of them and it would just be all men, just tables of men, and absolutely no women in that world whatsoever. You know, and I was sort of always sort of questioned. I'd wonder, God, this is so different than my life. This is so different than what I'm used to. And there was such a one-sided conversation and a one-sided view of how to approach any kind of problem and everything else. And so I remember, you know, certainly when we had our daughter, Jasmine, thinking to myself, okay, here's this young girl. I want her to be able to do whatever she wants in this world. I don't want her to just grow up and sort of think, well, this is what I have to do. These are the industries that I have to work in. Potentially she might go into fashion. Okay, she might. But what happens if she doesn't want to? What happens if she wants to go into finance or any of these other jobs in the world? You know, why shouldn't she have that equal opportunity to do those things, and not just to do them, but to rise in those jobs to the highest position that she can because of her talent, because of her ability? And was that moment for me really having a young girl and sort of seeing her grow up and begin to interact. And you instantly realize just how people make these assumptions that, oh, she's a little girl, she should wear pink, that she should have a Barbie doll, she should like unicorns or rainbows and everything else. And all these sort of stereotypes that are out there. And thinking to myself, well, actually, no, let's shatter all of those. And I remember actually as a little boy, when my sister was born, and I must have been about 4 or 5 years old, and she was about 1 or 2, and she got the measles. And the measles, you know, you get little dots and blemishes all over your body, little bumps that are very itchy. I'd actually asked for this, but I had a doll, which everyone frowned upon, and because they were like, why are you giving this little boy a doll? But I had wanted a doll because I'd wanted to have what my mother had. And my mother was very open to this and gave me a doll. And when my sister had the measles, I colored in the measles all over my doll. And of course, when my sister recovered from the measles, thankfully, I couldn't wash these dots off my doll anymore. And all of a sudden, you know, the doll was retired and I was no longer playing with the doll. But people have been sort of actually concerned that if I'd been given a doll, that I actually might grow up and, you know, it might affect me that I would be overtly feminine because I'd had a doll, or it might make me gay because I had a doll, or any of these sorts of things. And of course, it's just ludicrous. What it did do is it just, you know, allowed me to be myself, to be me. And if I wanted a doll, I could have a doll. It didn't make me one thing or another. And so, you know, with my daughter, I was thinking, well, I wanted to have whatever she wants to have. If she wants to climb trees, go ahead and climb trees. If she, you know, wants to ride on a motorcycle, go for it. Do whatever you want to do. You know, I want you to play soccer. I want you to play rugby. I want you to do ballet. I want you to do whatever you want to do. And likewise for my son. He goes both ways. It's just called independence and freedom and being able to love a child for who they are, not for who you want them to be.
Yeah, completely. I mean, that's just so powerful. And, you know, I mean, having learned what you have from all of your advocacy work, are there any sorts of things that you do in your day-to-day now that are maybe different from what you would have done in the past?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, obviously I work in the fashion industry. I'm a photographer. I get the ability to sort of showcase stories, ideas, concepts within my work. And quite often it's quite fun to sort of illustrate concepts and ideas through photography or through a PSA or through a documentary of content that you're creating that helps to, I guess, get people to open their eyes and wake up and question all these ideas, or even just to think about them, or to celebrate various other ideas and people. So that's something that I do. And as I said, I already have so many women who I are partnered with, who I work with, I collaborate with, who I work for, and all the rest of it, that certainly as a part of my day-to-day, it's already been there, it's always there, and it's still there, and it will continue to be there. And I try to encourage everybody else to see that particular perspective and point of view. Even the competitions that I've worked on, I mean, some people said, oh, but you work in the fashion industry, that takes advantage of women, that sort of is a stereotype in itself. I'm like, well, yes and no. I mean, yes, there's no doubt the fashion industry has been guilty of many things. But at the same time, it is also an industry and a business and a multi-billion-dollar industry. And it gives a lot of people the opportunity to express themselves. And it's creative and it's a fun industry to work in. It's not going anywhere. So you can't sort of assume that all of a sudden it's not okay to work in that business. But it's rather within that industry to help change people's perspectives. And I've done all kinds of campaigns, whether it's been anti-fur or humanely getting fur, or whether it's leather or any of those sorts of things, I try to work on those campaigns as well, really just to get people activated and use fashion and use the fashion industry as a vehicle to grab people's attention, because everyone is fascinated these days with fashion and entertainment, and unfortunately with being a celebrity. But I feel that the most important type of model one can be is a role model, and that's something which is out there for anyone to become. And you know, so as much as I can and as often as I can, I try to involve a charitable link to any and every job that I do. It's one thing to get someone's attention on some fashion advice or a fashion tip, but it's another thing to simultaneously get them activated with an important cause. And that's really been my mission in life, one way or the other.
So just on this whole idea of taking action, you know, if you could get men to do one or two things today to support the women in their lives, you know, what would that be?
What I would ask people to do is to open their hearts up. I would ask them to, you know, when they say I love you to their wife or their girlfriend or to their child, their daughter or their son, to actually understand, I think, what that means, which is to give that person every opportunity to unselfishly want for them to have whatever they can have, whatever opportunity is there for them, to be able to offer it to them. And, you know, to understand just how much better life can be and will be and is when you have that mentality. It's not about taking things for yourself, but, you know, as they often say, the joy is in the giving, is less than the receiving. And, you know, to sort of see people's faces and to see how they react when they are given an opportunity that they haven't had before is remarkable. And we shouldn't feel threatened. No man should feel threatened. In fact, we should feel empowered ourselves, empowered to give and empowered to love. And, you know, and talking about being a feminist, you know, I am a feminist, but really I like to think of myself as a humanist. This is the way we should all be. This is less about me being he for she as it is about me being he for we. Because I believe that, you know, this is the right thing for men as much as it is the right thing for women. That's what it should mean to be a man. It's what it should mean to be a woman. It's what it should mean to be a human. That we are just out there to doing the right thing for every cause and for every issue as equals.
You know, the thing that I really loved about this chat with Nigel is that he makes gender equality a daily practice. I love hearing from men who are passionate about supporting and championing the woman in their lives. The one thing I want to encourage all men to do is to start sharing how they advance gender equality. No matter how big or small the action, start speaking up and sharing the steps that you take to support the women in your lives. This is how we can celebrate and encourage more men to join the fight for gender equality. So today on Fairy God Boss Insights, we're going to be talking about how companies can encourage men to champion gender equality at work. Nearly half of the women on Fairy God Boss's online career community say they're not treated equally in their workplace. One third of the women say that their workplace experience largely depends on their manager. So given the male dominance in leadership positions, it's critical that companies support men with advancing women at work. So what can companies do? Well, there are four things. The first thing companies can do is start to have honest conversations. If men hear from female colleagues about the barriers they face at work, they're going to feel more compassionate and more motivated to help them. The second thing companies can do is hold managers accountable. A commitment from the top to build a diverse and inclusive workplace is simply not enough. Managers have to be held accountable. Reward managers who create an environment that supports women to thrive. The third thing companies can do is train managers. Help managers to understand gender inequality and their role in fixing it. And the fourth thing companies can do is celebrate results. It's important to not only achieve results, but to celebrate them when you do, as this encourages more employees to take even bigger steps. I really hope you all enjoyed today's podcast. If any of the topics we've discussed resonate with you, or if our show has helped you in any way, please leave us a review on iTunes. Thanks so much, guys, for tuning in, and I'll catch you all again next week.
Innovates is produced by Human Group Media, a company that inspires people to do good through the power of audio storytelling. This podcast is made possible by SAP NextGen, an innovation platform that enables everyone, from individuals, companies, partners, and universities, to connect and innovate with purpose. In doing so, SAP NextGen supports the achievement of the Sustainable Development Goals.